everything art. Everything cultural. The cultural thing. The cultural thing.
I think there's a big psychological change that has to go on in their head, because you're seeing the world in three dimensions and you've got to convert it into two dimensions.
Right.
And that process is surprisingly difficult to do. Once you are able to do it, then I think everything starts to flow much more easily. So that there is a point where maybe a penny drops and suddenly people get it. I don't think it's easy. The mechanical, technical side of it isn't hard. It's much harder to learn to write, for instance.
Oh, really? You think so?
Technically, yes. The muscles in the hand have to do a lot more coordination for writing than for drawing or painting.
I never knew that.
But the observation has to be precise, and I think that's another thing entirely, and that's hard to teach.
Right.
When you've got it, it looks like it's a gift, but it's probably, it's not a trick either, it's just a way of changing your thought processes, perhaps.
As a layman, I would describe your work as traditional, in that it's a painting, you can see what you're painting, it's almost photographic, as it were. How would you describe your work?
It's figurative. I think that's probably a word that I would just describe it as, loose, gestural, but figurative painting. I certainly wouldn't describe it as photographic, because of the looseness, bringing a wide vocabulary of marks, elements of abstraction might come into it as well, so that you get thin washes, glazes, impastos, layering, scumbles, scratching into it, scraffito.
What's a scumble?
A scumble is where you put one layer over another layer, but with a broken mark, so that the colour underneath shows through.
Oh, right, yep.
So I'm very much playing around with the grammar and vocabulary of mark making, but it just happens to have a subject that I'm also referring to.
What do you look for in a subject?
Probably, first of all, it's the lighting, the way the light catches a subject, the colours that are around it, composition. I suppose there's something indefinable as well. You just look at something and for whatever reason you feel strongly attracted to it as a subject, and it might not be the obvious or beautiful subjects. It might be something rather gnarled and difficult, perhaps.
Do you normally go for the gnarled?
Yes.
Is that what appeals to you?
Yes, definitely. One advice I was given by a portrait painter was to never try and paint beautiful women or children.
Right.
Their features are too even and smooth. What he suggested was that you paint ugly old men, where their ears have grown over the years and continue to grow. Their noses seem to keep growing, maybe with weather-beaten face and the bone structure very prominent and everything almost like a caricature they become. Mm. And it avoids what the advertising world might look for, which is glamour, which is very nice, but perhaps lacking some depth in it sometimes.
Mm. It's nice to know that my face is becoming a potential oil painting.
Yes.
You mentioned that you start by painting the thing that you're actually seeing, but then go into the studio where a more reflective process happens. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, what you mean by that?
Yes. Sometimes when you're in front of a subject, you get overwhelmed by it, and you maybe then start to get locked into details of things. When you distance yourself by going into the studio, you've got it in your memory, because you've been looking at it for 3 hours, and maybe going back on other occasions before that to research it and draw and observe it in different weather and lighting conditions. So there's usually an accumulation of images, and in the studio those memories can come through, and it gives you a freedom that you don't have in front of the subject, because you would feel perhaps like you weren't being true to it. But in the studio you're being true to a subjective impression that you got from the subject, which in some ways I would argue is a deeper feeling, because it's a result of lots of different inputs. Just the feeling of the weather on the day, the sun on your back or the rain in your face, whichever it is. Turner's paintings were done in the studio from very brief pencil sketches he did, sometimes 20, 30 years earlier.
Wow.
The studio is a good place to reinvent and play with a subject.
And do you think you would lose that if you did it completely while you were looking at it?
Not lose it. Some paintings work very well. If you work in front of the subject, you can get a freshness, a truthfulness, if you like. So I just see figurative painting as being a balance between that. The last thing you'd want to do is take a photograph, go into the studio and copy a photograph. There'll be no life generally in the painting.
You do cityscapes and you also do portraits. Do you approach them in a different way?
Not really, and I often find if I'm stuck on a portrait, I can go maybe do a cityscape, landscape, and the freedom where you don't have to get things absolutely accurate within a millimetre can loosen up the process of painting. And then when I go back to doing the portrait, I can actually be freer with the mark making and portrait can work better. Sometimes also the other way, by doing a portrait, the precision that's required can help observation when it comes to cityscape or landscape.
Right.
They have different emphasis, perhaps, but I don't approach them in an obviously different way.
So do you often do that work with a portrait and a landscape?
Yes, I do, yeah. And I like that variety, yes. Just a way of getting over a block now and again.
Writers, when they talk about characters that they write, they sometimes say that the character takes over what they're writing and often can surprise the author. Is it the same for a painter? Maybe when you're doing a painting of something, does that happen?
Yes, you hope that it'll happen. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes you've got a picture in your mind's eye, you paint it and there it is, and there'll be no surprises, and it's a disappointment, it's an anticlimax, and it's okay, it might be a perfectly good painting. But you hope something happens in the process and it becomes almost like a conversation. You put a mark down and then sometimes it almost feels like you've been told how to generate the next mark.
Right.
When that happens, then it feels like a two-way process and that there's a character developing there that's independent of me. The ones that I really like best are the ones that just, I wonder how it got there.
It almost paints itself, you know.
Oh, yes. It's taken on a life of its own, and I was just almost like a medium, I suppose, helping the process along. That's a nice feeling.
When you start something, do you know roughly how long it's going to take?
I could vaguely put a time on it, but, yeah, there's huge differences. I've worked on a self-portrait last year, spent 30 hours on it and abandoned it. I worked on another one this year, and in an hour and a half it was there. I would, if I was working outdoors on a cityscape, 3 hours would be a maximum, because by then the lighting and the weather's changed. Also by then you're tired, you're not seeing things clearly anymore, and also the paint surface has probably become just a little bit overworked in some ways, so you need to stop after 3 hours, maybe three or four sessions, either in the studio or coming back to the same location in similar conditions.
Going back to self-portraits and discovering something about the person, is it easy to do a self-portrait view for that reason? Do you find out things about yourself that are perhaps difficult?
I find with portraits in general, it's a great privilege to be able to look at somebody for a long period of time and really observe. If you do it in normal life, it would be considered rude. We glance and we glance away and so on. Same with the self-portraits, you don't look very long and hard at yourself generally. So yes, to paint, I painted my brother recently and found that worked very easily and naturally, because it was like painting myself a good few years ago, because he's a good few years younger than me.
Right.
So I recognised the shapes.
Right.
Instinctively, I suppose. Psychologically, I don't know if it comes into it. I suppose at some level it does, but you're much more concerned about the shapes, the colours, the tones, the mark making, the expression, which is usually a rather intense one when you're doing a self-portrait, so you end up looking like the Russian writer.
I know what you mean. You've got some portraits with Tony Blair and the Queen as well, is that?
I've got paintings, yes. The Royal Family have got a painting, and yes, Tony and Sherry Blair, when they came up to Gateshead a few years ago, they got one then.
Right. Well, what are the paintings?
One is a painting of the Bladen races, which was on the grounds of the Bowes Lyon estate, where the Queen Mother comes from.
Right.
The other was a painting of my daughter. She was born at the same time as Tony Sherry Blair's fourth child was born, so it was relevant to them.
Did you charge them a lot for it?
I didn't, know. I was very even-handed.
Right. How does it feel then to know that your paintings are with the Queen and Tony Blair?
It's not something I think about, to be honest. Very nice to know that your work is anywhere. I suppose it is a nice feeling, yes.
Okay, brilliant. Peter, thank you very much for the interview. It's been very interesting.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You can get more information about The Cultural Thing and about arts in the northeast of England in general by visiting our website, garito.org/The Cultural Thing.
A Garito presentation.